To Dan off mic, it's been an emotional week here in Indiana and across the country. The announced conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in the murder of George Floyd and the continued outrage over the death of 13-year-old Adam Toledo in Chicago has sparked discussion. We bring you that. Earth Day celebrations continue in Northwest Indiana. We talk about how one city is using the occasion to get its citizens involved in cleaning up the community. And April is National Organ Donor Month. We talk about the need for more people of color to become organ donors. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ in Chicago. This has certainly been an emotional time in our country. The death of George Floyd last year sparked a national outcry. His death was shocking because, as many have known since that tragic day on May 25th, 2020 in Minneapolis, and we know now for sure, his murder was captured on a cell phone video. His murder carried out by a former Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin. Chauvin's conviction in the murder of George Floyd sparked heavy emotions all over the country, including in Chicago. I got a chance to speak to some folks at Daley Plaza after the verdict was announced. I'm bringing you that audio because whether it's Minneapolis or in Chicago or right here in Northwest Indiana, some officers have lost the understanding of what it means to serve and protect. And we need to listen.
Yeah, my name is Kobe Gittery. I am one of the co-chairs of the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, or CAARPR. We're here today in solidarity with our comrades and friends in Minneapolis who've been protesting nonstop since last summer when George Floyd was murdered. And as we celebrate this guilty verdict, we also have to understand that this is not the entire system. This is not the end of our fight. We are still going to be in these streets. We are still going to be pushing for justice for all of our people, because justice for George Floyd is not just one cop going to jail. Justice for George Floyd means this entire system has to be overhauled. Regardless of what the verdict was going to be, there is still an entire system that we need to fight against. So this guilty verdict is a good sign. It's definitely a victory for our people. But it's still the same country. And I think the message of the verdict is that when people are united and are moving in the streets, when we shut things down, we can get things done. This is not the judicial system acting on its own conscience. This is the system acting in a way that it was forced to act by hundreds of thousands of people being in the streets and rebelling and demanding that this happened. So again, the system will not tear itself down. We have to tear it down. We have to be the ones to destroy white supremacy.
Hello, my name is Mark Clements, and I am with the Chicago Torture Justice Center, a center of its only kind that deals with domestic impact violence that is caused by members of the Chicago Police Department. You know what happened with Brother George Floyd is an insult, is an outrage. And let me tell you, this jury, it tells me that listening to the evidence in the case, that they were very determined already before they went into the deliberation room. This was a case that reached international attention. And you mean to tell me that the defense could not mount up an adequate defense? No, they could not. And they could not due to the fact that it was clear from the outset of this case that it was murder, that it was at least some form of manslaughter. You're looking at a Chicago police torture survivor myself. who spent over 28 years of his life hemmed up inside of a prison. I was just as happy watching that verdict as I was watching when John Burge was found guilty for lying about police torture in the city of Chicago. Where is the accountability? We can mount out $27, $28, $30 million, but where's the healing? Where is the healing? Where is the accountability? We have in this city listened to a mayor repeatedly tell us that it is her hopes and dreams and desires to come out with accountability against the police department. But we have not seen accountability. As I watch a young 13-year-old kid over in the Little Village community slaughtered, unfortunately, it's the mayor along with the FOP that does not want to see policy change. And as a result, black and brown people have been treated like political footballs in this state and all over this country. We want justice. When are we going to say that when it comes to the Chicago Police Department, when it comes to the Minnesota Police Department, when it comes to the California Police Department? We must say that now. In closing, I will say this to Brother Adam, a little young kid gunned down in the middle of the street and treated like a dog. This little ugly face will remain to fight the city of Chicago for accountability, because you didn't have to die. You may have done some wrongs, but you didn't have to die. George Floyd didn't have to die. I'll say it again. George Floyd didn't have to die. Thank you.
Strong voices at Daley Plaza following Tuesday's verdict in the Derek Chauvin murder case. And the speaker mentioned the case of Adam Toledo, the 13-year-old Latino boy who was gunned down by police in the Little Village area of Chicago. Some have pointed out, why was such a young kid out in the street at 3 o'clock in the morning? Some say he still didn't have to die. Toledo's killing was also captured on graphic video and released last week. Earlier this week, a group of Latino lawyers spoke out against the officer who fired the fatal shot and are demanding a federal investigation. Attorney Arturo Jauregui heads the group.
Yeah, Arturo Jauregui, managing partner of the Pilsen Law Center.
You're asking for the Justice Department to conduct its own investigation. Why?
Well, it's very simple, because we do not trust the city of Chicago or the police department to investigate itself. They these are things that have never worked well for the Latino community. And if we are going to have true systemic reforms, any investigation that is conducted into the death of Adam Toledo, it has to be conducted by a neutral arbiter, by a neutral entity. And we believe, especially currently right now under the Biden administration, we believe that the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, that he's a good man, and that he understands the needs of our community. And the only way how laws work in our society, the only way the legal system and the courts work, is if the citizens have faith in the legal system. When the citizens do not trust the legal system, when they do not have faith in the police community, in the police officers that are supposed to serve and protect us, then it falls apart. It doesn't work. So the only way how this is going to work is if we have systemic changes that with meaningful reform, with court oversight, that to ensure that the changes and the process in getting to those changes is going to be transparent, and that the community is going to be given a voice at the table so that they are heard and they know that someone is not making decisions for them, but rather that the decisions that they're being made, that they are part of the process. And when you bring people to the table, when you invite them, then they feel they're part of the process, and that really goes a long way to foster the trust between those that say that they're going to serve and protect our community and the citizens of our community. So that is absolutely critical.
Do you feel that the investigation up until this point has been lacking, and are you so disappointed in Mayor Lightfoot?
Well, you know, the mayor, I think the mayor has been, you know, the mayor has been forthcoming in identifying the deficiencies, what has failed Adam, and for that we applaud her. But we want the mayor to really go the extra mile here. We want the mayor to stand with us. And if the mayor is calling for the end of the policies and food pursuits that have killed so many innocent people, then we need to end that policy right now. As it is, it's a five-page document, a training bulletin on police food chases. It is incredibly confusing. I mean, I'm a lawyer, and I you know, after I finished reading it, I was like cross-eyed because I had no idea. If I was a police officer, I would have absolutely no idea what I had to do. So the mayor acknowledges that we need to start it right away. You know, we need to dispose of those guidelines and implement clear procedures, procedures that are going to tell a police officer what he or she can and cannot do. And when they don't follow those rules, that we're going to hold them accountable, that we're going to discipline them. You know, the blue code, you know, the styling code, you know, we need to get rid of that stuff. It has never worked. It has never served the city. It has never served, you know, the communities. We need to get rid of that stuff. There has to be transparency. And, you know, at the end of the day, as I mentioned, everyone is going to be a little safer when people trust each other.
You were saying earlier are you supporting perhaps criminal charges against the officer who shot Adam Toledo?
You know, we want justice for Adam Toledo. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to fall into the same trap that the Fraternal Order of Police is doing, where they're trying and executing the kid and saying that the police officer was fully justified. You know, the video that was released, as painful as it is very troubling. And the, you know, I don't know whether or not, you know, the video was altered, or, you know, there's a version of the video. I don't know if it was slowed down for special effects. You know, all we know right now is a 13-year-old kid running scared, and, you know, he's told to stop, he stops. You know, he's told to raise his hands, he raises his hands. He turns around, and then, you know, he's shot. So, you know, we're just not going to go there right now. We need an investigation, and we're going to let the facts lead wherever they may. And once a full investigation has been conducted, and yes, we do want justice. We do want justice for the family. The community has to feel that they've had their day in court and that the system has not failed them. So we want that investigation. It's just critical to restore the trust of the community.
And you want additional resources here in Pilsen?
Well, that's absolutely critical. You know, it's no accident that, you know, Adam resided in, you know, the future of any kid should not be determined by the area code where they live, by the zip code where they live. 60623, that's the zip code for Pilsen Little Village. You know, no future of any child should be determined by virtue of the zip code where they live. We need resources in the Latino community. We need resources in Little Village, especially right now. And, you know, there is some $80 million plus that should be headed to that community to address the needs of the community and the roots and the causes that led to that fatal day for Adam Toledo.
Do you put any responsibility? There's been some people out there talking about the family, perhaps the parents, they should have known where Adam was at that night. Any responsibility there?
You know, anybody that is a parent knows how difficult it is to raise children. And unless you're going to be walking in the shoes of Adam Toledo's mother, no one has any business judging what kind of mother she was.
One more question. How long have you been here in Pilsen? All your life?
I started when I was a young man at the First Legal Services Center for Immigrants on Blue Island in 18th Street. Went to law school, went to work for MOLDEF, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, doing civil rights litigation for 10 years. I've spent most of my life as an attorney downtown. In 2015, I decided I had enough. I came back to Pilsen, my roots, and I love the community. I love where I am. And this is where we're going to fight for the rights of the community.
Are you originally from Mexico?
I am.
Mexico City?
I'm from Teocaltiche, the town of Teocaltiche, Jalisco, small town. Boy that came here 15 years ago with $100 in my pocket. 100 pesos, not $100.
100 pesos is like a dollar, right?
That's a lot of money, 100 pesos and a lot of dreams.
Yeah.
A lot of dreams.
Well, have you ever seen a time where Pilsen is hurting as much as it is now?
No, I have not. I have not. Our community, all sectors of our community are hurting. The business community is suffering a lot. The residents, the arts community, we need help. You know, we really need help. You know, it's Pilsen Little Village, back of the yards. You know, we are communities that are suffering right now. And, you know, those all those federal resources that are coming to the cities and to the states, they need to put those resources in the communities because, you know, we have paid the brunt of this pandemic. You know, a lot of, you know, thousands of people die in the slaughterhouses. You know, many other people that have been out there working on the front lines, on the hotel industry, the restaurants. I mean, we take care of the needs of this country. You know, it's high time that we acknowledge that and we throw a little bit of help their way.
In terms of Adam's passing, do you see a lot of emotion there? With Adam's death.
There's a lot of emotion. I mean, I will tell you that anyone that has kids, anyone that has young boys, you know, they're in shock. You know, they're in shock because, you know, they cannot imagine what they would do if something happened to their children. And that's the reason, you know, there are tens of thousands of kids walking in Adam's shoes right now there in our communities. You know, they are there. We need to rescue those kids. We need to bring resources. We need to take care of them. They're our future. You know, I'll tell you, it's a lot cheaper to take care of kids right now than to spend $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 and keep them in jail later on every year for the rest of their lives, where we're going to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, to keep someone incarcerated. It's a lot cheaper to educate them.
And that was attorney Arturo Jauregui. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Earth Day was earlier this week. That's an annual event to draw attention to conservation and ways to protect, help Mother Earth. And locally, there are some people here trying to make Northwest Indiana more sustainable and build a better future for the environment. Brenda Scott Henry is with the City of Gary, and she's leading an effort to help with that. Off Mic student intern producer Andrea Doty recently spoke to Brenda about her efforts.
Hi, Brenda. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm the director for the Office of Sustainability and Environmental Affairs for the City of Gary. I've been with the city in that capacity for about 8 years. But prior to then, I was a consultant who did water quality projects in the Northwest Indiana area.
Oh, wow. That's really important.
Absolutely. As you know, in Northwest Indiana, we sit on one of the most beautiful lakes, I say, because I'm partial to Lake Michigan. And we have lots of lakefront available in our community for the public to enjoy. So it's important that we protect that water body.
Especially with this week being Earth Week, it's especially important. like we have some events this week. What would you say about how the event's going this week?
Oh my, it was this Earth Day week kind of happened by circumstance. We have lots of environmental partners that work with us and they enjoy working with us. And so we decided that everyone that is doing some type of environmental education initiative, that we pool those resources together, those events together, and call it Earth Week and let everybody do their thing. But we just use one forum in which we advocate for those activities for the public to enjoy. And, you know, we're coming out of COVID and a lot of folks want to get outdoors. And so we're trying to find activities. We are offering our activities that would be friendly, safe for families to go out and do.
So Brenda, yesterday was Earth Day. What activities did you have?
Okay, so today is Earth Day, which is why I'm wearing my green. We asked all of our city employees to do the same. So I'm hoping to get some social media pics on our Facebook page. But today, we're just doing a scavenger hunt. We've identified 7 landmarks within the city, and we're asking our residents to go to at least 3 of those sites and take a selfie and post it on our Facebook page. Earlier in the week, yesterday, we had a climate action planning meeting on Facebook Live where we discussed our work in terms of establishing some greenhouse gas reduction targets. We would like to make sure that we can do our part to reduce our carbon footprint on this earth, but do it as a climate action plan.
And what are those landmarks?
So of course it's Lake Michigan. We have a national park right in our community. Then there's the Rain Garden located at City Hall. And we have some conservation spaces within the city of Gary. So there's the Ivanhoe Nature Preserve. And then there's some tree planting going on at Indiana University, as well as right adjacent to the Gleason Park. And then any of our trails, the Greenlink Trail is one of those locations, or it could be any trail that is located within our community, Oak Savannah Trail, Miller Wood Trails. So those are some of the locations that we've identified for folks to go out and take a selfie.
Oh, wow. So protecting all of these areas is really important to you, wouldn't you say?
It is very important to us. So our department is responsible for overseeing policy as it relates to air quality, water quality, land quality. And it's important that we educate the public about things that they can do to help us to do that. So behavior change is critical in terms of changing the conditions that we're in, being that we have, we are a non-attainment community. So that means that we have poor air quality that, and that's contributed to us being an industrial community. And then we are the crossroads of America. So you have lots of transit that is coming through the community. But there are things that we can do, like planting trees, that will allow us to help reduce those carbons that are emitting into the air. Native planting, like rain gardens or nature preserves, are another way that we can help to reduce carbons in the air.
Yes, I love to watch when areas plant new trees, and I just love to see the transformation of it.
Yeah.
So, how did this become so important to you in your career?
Well, so one of the things is that I was challenged, kind of. It wasn't a direct challenge, but it was me at a meeting in the focus of our environmental education was not in the urban core. And I'm thinking that, well, that's the most populous area of any community, right? So in Northwest Indiana, that's Gary, Hammond, and East Chicago. They're the urban core. Why not put the environmental education in those core areas so that we can learn what, you know, behavior changes? So if you say, you know, pick up after your dog, don't allow, you know, the waste to be on the ground, or never dump anything down a drain. So these were types of stormwater pollution prevention activities that we were asking the community to do. And it was like, okay, well, let's focus our education in the urban core. And it was like, nah, you know, everybody should be responsible for taking care of their own community. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. And from that point, I always committed myself to provide environmental education wherever I can, and in fun ways, like we're doing this week for Earth Week.
Yeah, it's great when the community can be interactive with one another, especially during right now when we have this pandemic going on and, you know, we've sort of been away from each other. It's just nice to get out.
It really is. And safely. And outdoors is just the best place to be. You know, people are tired of being cooped up in homes and limited to what they can do. And you go out and do your errands and you do it quickly and you come back in the house, right? So I think that finding fun things and educational activities for the public to do is ideal. And it gets our message across. Hopefully we have people who become more appreciative of our natural environment.
Right. Yes. So I've learned that Gary has a long history of industry, especially through the steel mills. I see the steel mills all the time when I'm driving through the area. Mm-hmm. That's brought a lot of jobs to the city, but it's also been hard on the environment.
Yeah.
Do you think the industry can do a better job in protecting the air, water, and land, but also provide jobs?
Absolutely. Every day, and I'm excited in this time of our era where there are some best practices that we can offer businesses, industrial businesses. I was actually listening at a program the other day where they were, this university had begun to capture some of the steel mill greenhouse gases, and they were finding different uses for it. So I think that the more innovative that young folks, I'm saying I wanna give a push for young folks to do that and learn about new, better practices, we can begin to get a handle on the pollution. And that's another thing that when you do in the industry, they will call it lean operation when they are doing more of the recycling types of activities or more sustainable activities. It's cost savings for them. It protects the environment, and it still offers job opportunities for folks. So the idea is not to oust folks, do your operation so lean that it causes people to lose their job, but just the organization. So the steel industry as an organization to have better practices in terms of how they process products. So there are some energy efficient ways in which we can do things now that is acceptable and is cost savings.
Okay, so how would you suggest people do their part to pitch in?
Oh, wonderful you asked that question. So this weekend, we have our Household Hazardous Waste Collection Day. This is an opportunity for you to do a little spring cleaning, go through your garages, your basement and your cabinets to pull out all of those hazardous materials that you're not using anymore and bring them to us. And we will properly dispose of those. We will also have e-recycling. So who uses a VCR anymore or a CD player anymore or a house phone anymore? So all of the electronic equipment that you have in your home, bundle it up and bring it to us. Our recycling department has receives e-recycling. We will also have a tire disposal. That's a big issue, waste tire disposal. So there are a lot of tires, abandoned tires that are around and about, but we are only, you know, businesses are required by law to properly dispose of their tires. We're asking residents to bring up to four tires they can bring to our site, which is located at the Hudson Campbell Fitness Center at 455 Massachusetts Street. So you can bring your waste tires to us, and we will have a rain barrel sale. So lots of activities that will be going on that day for the public to enjoy, and is free of charge to residents. One thing that any resident in the Northwest Indiana region can do is participate in our gas can exchange. You know, some people keep their small engine gasoline for the small engine equipment like lawnmowers or weed whackers. We have environmentally friendly gas cans to give away. So if you have an old one, just bring us that old gas can and we'll give you an environmentally free one, 2.5 gallons. So those are some activities that you can do and will help protect the environment. You're not sending that trash or that waste to the landfill, but you're bringing it to us so that we can properly dispose of it.
Are you finding that the younger crowd is into your cause and wanting to help the environment?
I would hope so. I think at one point, children were leading this recycling effort. Today,
would you say it's a hard sell?
I'm not certain. It's not like a priority on the list. Right. And I would love to see that change. I would love to see young folks take a leadership in terms of how they would like to protect this earth that we are stewards over, and everyone can play a role in. But I would like to know how to make it important to them.
I remember being in grade school when we did all of that stuff, and it was really important to us. We had fun doing it.
Yeah. So do you still keep those practices?
I try to, yes.
Okay, great. That's good to know.
Brenda Scott Henry is with the City of Gary Office of Sustainability and Environmental Affairs. Brenda, thank you so much for joining us today on Off Mic.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. April is National Donate Life Month, a time designated to honor organ and tissue donors and celebrate the lives saved through the gift of donation. Dr. Harry Wilkins is president and CEO of Gift of Hope. He joins us on Off Mic to talk about the significance of the month and the need for more organ donors. Hello, Dr. Wilkins. How are you?
I am doing well today. How are you?
Very good, very good. Dr. Wilkins, why don't you tell me a little bit about National Donate Life Month?
Sure. So it correlates with spring, and we always think about organ donation as, you know, new beginnings and that sort of things. In other words, you know, when organ donation happens, you know, a tragic event has occurred. Someone has lost their life. And one of the things that donation provides is a better ending, so to speak, for someone's life. You know, when someone dies and they're able to donate their organs or tissues, someone else is getting a new lease on life, and that brings a lot of comfort and healing to family. And in spring, you know, with the new renewal and everything else, I think that's why it's appropriate for Donate Life Month to occur every April. So that's what we're celebrating this April, is National Donate Life Month.
And I see that there are currently 108,000 people in the United States waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. What type of people are you looking for? Who is a good candidate to donate an organ?
Well, medical science has actually continued to increase. And it used to be that, you know, someone had to be in their 40s or 50s, and that's where we would cut off. These days, you know, it's not unheard of to have someone well into their 80s. Donate kidneys or a liver, you know, hearts and lungs, not quite so much. But more and more what we want to do is we want to have anyone who has died in a hospital or a setting that may allow for the possibility of organ donation to call the OPO. That's what Gift of Hope is the organ procurement organization. And it's our job to evaluate for medical appropriateness, to approach families, to educate the community and hospital partners about the donation process, and then, of course, facilitate that process. So actually, the ability to donate is actually expanding as people are living longer, they're living healthier lives. So we can see people quite up in age that can actually donate.
Let me ask you this. When a person decides to be a organ donor, usually I guess you have to fill out the back of your driver's license, and I'm not sure how the process still is. But when that time comes when something tragic has happened, how do you approach a family to say, your loved one was an organ donor and it's time to sort of harvest those organs?
Well, so there's quite a bit to unpack in that question, and I'd like to start with the process of becoming a registered organ donor. So I think most people understand that when you go to get your license, they ask you if you want to be an organ donor, and that is just one of many ways that you can register to be an organ donor. You actually don't even have to have a driver's license to be on what we call the donor registry, and the registry is just a list of people who have indicated their decision to become an organ donor upon their death. We have, lots of people have organ donor drives, particularly in Donate Life Month. We put on donor registration drives. There are ways to go to the website. You can go to giftofhope.org, and there's a link to sign up there. We also have it so that you can text HOPE, H-O-P-E, to 51555 on your cell phone, and that will send a link to be able to sign up. If you have an Apple iPhone, you can go to the Health app, and you can sign up to be a registered donor there. So there's lots of different ways to register to be an organ donor other than just on your driver's license. The second thing I wanted to bring up is that once you have decided as an adult to become an organ donor and you register, it's what's called a first person authorization, upon your death, your wishes must be followed, and that's a legally binding document. It falls under gift law, so it's no different than if you were to write a will and you had a muscle car that you wanted to leave to your nephew. Upon your death, that will is binding under gift law that muscle car goes to your nephew. Same with organ donation, it's under gift law. The other part that we also say is that if you've made that decision to become an organ donor, the other critical piece is discuss it with your family and let them know that what your wishes are, because that comes down to the other part of when someone has died and they've had this tragic death, and then we have to, as an organ procurement organization, approach that family to get authorization to recover those organs. It has to be done very carefully. If you can imagine, these people are suffering the worst time of their life. And our organ coordinators are very skilled at, number one, making sure that the needs of the family are met. We want to make sure that they've slept, that they've had something to eat, that they've had time to absorb the news before we then talk with them about the options or let them know that their loved one is actually in the registry. Because unfortunately, oftentimes the families don't know that their loved one has signed up. So I know that's a long, long answer, but there's quite a bit packed into that one question. There's lots along that line.
You know, so many people may not even, think about being an organ donor or like, and maybe that conversation eludes talking to a family member. Why should one want to become an organ donor?
Well, I think many people will come to this for different reasons. But if you think about it, everyone on this earth at some point is going to pass on. They're going to die. And the question becomes, what do you want your legacy to be? If you're able to help someone in need, would you do that? If you're no longer in need of your organs and you've passed on, what would be the value of helping your fellow person in need? And as you mentioned, there's over 100,000 people waiting for an organ right now. In Illinois itself, there's over 7,000 people or 4,000 people in Illinois. In Northwest Indiana, the area I think where your listeners are, there are currently about 1,000 people in Northwest Indiana waiting on an organ donor, organ donation. And in 2020, there were 15 organ donors from that area. There's 9 hospitals and 7 long-term care facilities where you are. There were 15 organ donors in all of 2020, and there's 1,000 people in that area. So the need is great. And I think sometimes if people know what the need is, they would be more willing to be an organ donor should that occur. There's also living donation. You know, there's many people that are sitting there waiting for a kidney, which, by the way, is the most predominant organ that people are waiting for on that under 8,000. And a kidney transplant could save their life. So that's really one of the reasons. It's purely altruistic. It's it really provides an end, a better end to your life. It leaves a lasting legacy, and it is truly life-saving. It is truly a second chance at life for those 108,000 people waiting.
That's great. That's great. Now, a lot of people always wonder, you know, they talk about the issue of race and ethnicity. Is there, quote unquote, a need for more African Americans or Latinos to become organ donors?
Yeah, there is. And I would say that there's a need for more organ donors in general. I will tell you that there is a disparity in terms of the number of people waiting on the wait list for kidneys. About 60% of those are African-American people of colors. And of those who donate, it's probably in the 30 to 35% range, even though it is certainly able to have organ donation transfer across race. So a white person could donate to a black person and a black person could donate to a white person. It's just a matter of matching the DNA areas. We call them HLA loci. It's not race-based. So, but there is a better match if that can be done. So in general, the need is great, and we really want to encourage everyone to donate. But there is a bit of a disparity between communities of color and non-communities of color.
In a past story that I've done, a report that I did a few years ago about organ donations, a doctor who specializes in organ transplants once told me, and I thought it was a beautiful quote in that, you know, whether you're black or white or Latino or Chinese, under the skin, we are all the same. And it sounds like a great message, but science-based, we are all the same.
It is so true. And I will tell you, before I became CEO of Gift of Hope, I was a trauma surgeon for 36 years. And what would happen is, you know, you typically get a call and there's a stab wound or a gunshot wound or a horrible car crash or motorcycle crash. And you run in there. And first of all, your team that you're working with is from all walks of life and all colors. And then you're all after one common goal, is trying to save a life. You're not trying to save a black person or a white person or a CEO or a homeless person. You're trying to save a life. And so when you get up to the operating room and you prep the patient and put the gowns on and the covers, you open them up. And as you're working inside, there is absolutely no difference. And so to me, it's the great equalizer. You know, trauma does not discriminate against age, race, or social status. Neither does organ failure. You know, there are CEOs that are on the dialysis waiting list as well as homeless people. So it is a great equalizer. So I absolutely agree with the surgeon's quote that you mentioned.
If people want to find out more about organ transplant, especially during this month, what would you suggest?
The first thing I would say is go directly to the Gifts of Hope website. It's giftsofhope.org. And there's lots of stories of donor families and recipient families. There's lots of frequently asked questions. There's data there. There's links to different stories. So that would be the number one. I would tell them to listen to your show as well. Thank you very much for having me on for this. But during this National Donate Life Month, we have several events, virtual events. They're mostly virtual because of the ongoing COVID-19 restrictions. But there's several campaigns on Facebook and social media. We have a Creating a Lasting Legacy multimedia campaign that features three donor stories, Nikki Smith and Jamie Acevedo-Lube and Andrew Morton. That's our current campaign that's going throughout our service area. We also have shared lots of these materials on our website. And again, that's giftofhope.org. I would encourage people to go to that. And then a lot of our community partners, hospitals and other areas, are having online registration drives throughout the month. So lots of different places to go, but I would start with giftofhope.org.
Dr. Harry Wilkins is president and CEO of Gift of Hope. Dr. Wilkins, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Well, thank you for having us.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, here to wrap things up with the last few minutes we have remaining. If you're looking to do something this weekend in relation to Earth Day, there are three great events you can head to, and they're all in Gary. And starting tomorrow at 8 o'clock, you've got the Earth Day Block Cleanup that's at the 400 block of Fillmore Street in Gary. There's an announcement on that in on Facebook, and that is sponsored by the Indiana Young Democrats, 1st District. Again, tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning on the 400 block of Fillmore Street in Gary. Join us for this Earth Day community cleanup with the Indiana Young Democrats of the 1st District. We're part of partner with the Lake County Democratic Central Committee. So that's happening tomorrow at 8 o'clock. And then there's also an event on another event tomorrow, also on Saturday in Gary, Gateway to the Union Station cleanup, and that is at 300 Broadway in Gary. That starts tomorrow at 9 o'clock. And you've got Sunday this week at the Marquette Park cleanup, and that begins at 8 o'clock on Sunday, 8600 North Lake Street in Gary. I want to thank everybody today for listening to the show and all my guests, my producer, the fabulous Dee Dotson. You can hear this episode again by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. For me, Michael Puente, and everyone here at Lakeshore Public Radio, have a great weekend.